Awesome. So I'm excited to hear from you, Tiffany. Thank you for being here today. Really looking forward to hearing you share. And like I said, as you know, I think from our group, you can share for as long as you like. This floor is yours. Thanks, Tiffany.
Thanks. Like Jim said, I'm Tiffany. I'm a sex, love, and rock and roll is my issue. I'm so nervous. I hate this, doing this. It's weird. Right. So if at any point I shut my camera off and shut down, I'll be back. But, right. So I have, I would say my primary addiction is sex and love. And, I have dabbled in a ton of other things that have either made that easier, more accessible, or numbed the reaction, or I should say, the payoff or results of my main primary addiction. So there's things that I just avoid, certain addictions that I would be more likely to have. But I've been through a lot of programs, a lot of 12-step programs, and this is the one that I think is sort of at the center of it all for me. So that's the primary program I'm working. And I use Tesnu, and I've been here since August of this year still, sort of to supplement SLAA. Gosh. So I think it started. My mom is an active or an alcoholic, an addict, and she's in recovery as well. She has 30 some odd years, and she and my biological father were heavy in drugs and alcohol throughout my early years. My biological father is a convicted child rapist and molester. And I think that growing up, I was often compared to him a lot. I look the most like him. And I have similar needs for, or I was, I'm told I have similar needs to always be seeking attention, affection, to be outside, sourcing outside myself for, to be filled, right? Always looking for somebody else to provide for me that feeling of security or something else, but mostly people. I always felt apart from, and maybe not everybody will understand, but often in these rooms, I hear the same story, and I feel in spirit, I can connect to a lot of people just in that alone, is that that need, the feeling apart from, and looking outside myself. But I'm sorry. I think I'm gonna shut my camera off. That might help. I have a hard time feeling like I'm being perceived in a certain way, and that's been the truth forever. And today I'm still learning how to sort of stop trying to control how other people see me. And that's like the hardest thing for me. I haven't been in program for very long. This is, I think I'm coming on up on my third year. But I still try to control the outcome. Still try to tell people how to feel about me. So I think that feeling apart from lasted all throughout childhood. Seeking, sort of for my mother to fill the gaps that was left by my father, and never quite, she. I don't know. I'm not a professional, but I feel like she was a love avoidant, which is something you need sort of a glossary of terms in my program. But it's kind of described, or at least my understanding of it is that it's somebody that is scared of love. It makes them uncomfortable, or too much affection, or vulnerability. Those things are difficult, uncomfortable, and avoided at all cost. So, as a very needy child, I really needed to be loved. And I probably it was not unlike what my daughter does to me today, which can make me feel uncomfortable. I have a hard time too. But I'm trying to break that chain and show her that she's lovable, and that she deserves that, right? Because at some point as a child, when those needs aren't met, then you need it more. And then I sought it at other places. And there was a lot of hypersexualized, I had a hypersexualized sense of self. I felt like I got a certain type of attention, a certain type of affection, and it was never what was needed, but it was what I got, so I settled for that. And I was in inappropriate settings, and I realized looking back that I was abandoned in a way. I was not cared for in an appropriate way. I was often left with inappropriate people, and it resulted in sexual sexually violent, sexually exploitive situations. And it sort of served this thing like, oh, okay, this is a new way that I'm loved and needed, or at least perceived that it was love. And so I was like, okay, this is my new identity. I was also what I would describe how I qualify in program is that I'm a sex and love addict, a liar, a love avoidant, and a social anorexic. So I, which is why I'm typically off screen and have a hard time sharing, but it's good for my recovery, so that's why I'm here. If ever this sounds like I'm trying to be informative or provide direction in any way, I don't have it. It's bullshit. But anyways, I'm here for me. I grew up trying to fill that void in other people and things. I did a lot of drugs growing up. I used alcohol and psychedelics to avoid the feelings that I was having. I didn't, after being in these situations and exploited as a child and preteen, I avoided men at all cost. I avoided any situation that might put me there again. So the only thing I didn't do was stop drinking or using, which still put me back in positions to yeah, to the same outcome. I finally had my first partner in high in I'm sorry, in college. And it was like that addictive hit again. It was okay. There it is. This is the way that I can be loved and love. And then it was like pure insanity, which is not unlike probably a lot of people's story, first relationships. But I remember, I think I never had a credit card until about that time, but I started trying to please, and people pleasing has always been an issue for me. Codependence has always been an issue for me. But it was like, woo, hyperactive codependency. I don't know, but I started overspending, and I'm talking like thousands of dollars, and for a kid that doesn't have money. And whatever I could do to try and convince this person that my time is worth their while, that I'm worthy of just sharing the same space with somebody. And I didn't have a lot of friends because of that same, okay, I'm gonna attach and cling, and then sort of force you to like me. And it was absolutely manipulation, and people felt that. And it probably made them feel very uncomfortable. I'm not sure how they felt, but it didn't, no relationships really lasted very long. And about that time, I had started seeking anytime the relationship was difficult, I would just shut down. I find faults. Anytime the would I mean anytime they would respond or react to my over clingy need for validation and attention and affection, I would start shutting down. Anytime they asked for space or set boundaries, anything that was healthy, I would react and shut down, and then seek attention elsewhere. It was not conscious, but absolutely unhealthy and borderline, at worst, predatorial, in a sense that like I would seek attention and validation through, I mean, I'm talking normal ways like online selfies, stuff like that, online dating, and relationship or not, it didn't matter, especially early 20s. I just constantly needed somebody to tell me that I was pretty, or that my time was worthwhile. And I would often go from partner to partner. I was a serial relationship-er-ist. I don't know. But I would have, 3 year long relationships and be maybe present, emotionally available to them for half of that. And the other half, I was on my way out. And that was just a continual thing, just rinse and repeat for a lot of that. It wasn't until really that my kids came along, I have twins, that I really started to consider anything outside myself as important. And even then, it was like, I constantly found myself with alcoholics. Probably because it was easier to point a finger at them than look at myself and work on anything. I attached myself to alcoholics and progressively more abusive people. And then my kids eventually were a part of that picture too. And their father was an alcoholic, and It wasn't until when I left him and realized that he got better and I didn't. You know, he was abusive and alcoholic, and it was just like him, he's the problem. And then I left and he stopped drinking and remarried, has a wonderful life now. And I was like, oh shoot, it might be me. I might be the issue here. And you know, it wasn't ever, you know, I thought that my problem was my picker. I thought that I just continued to choose the wrong men and women. I continued to choose alcoholics and needy people and unavailable people and, you know, whatever it was. It wasn't me. And so then I went to Al-Anon, and I had been in that program as a teenager. I did Alateen when my parents were like what was called dry drunks to some. I don't know. A lot of people resent that term. That's self-described. I don't personally care, but it was pretty miserable for a little while there. So I started looking at Al-Anon, and that helped me sort of see like, okay, there's got to be accountability for my role. And then I was always pointing fingers and could never see really the whole image. That just self-awareness does not reside in me. Very self-centered person. And I do prescribe to that sort of idea somewhat. You know, I do feel like I am a very self-centered person. Insecure, is definitely a part of it. And that's, I guess, I would maybe inherently self-centered to feel that way. But also, I don't think that the answer is to throw myself over the coals. I think that the answer has really just been kindness for me. But anyways, I went to Al-Anon, and then they had said, maybe you should try CODA because you seem like they're in the next level. So I went to CODA and I was like, oh yeah, but what about all the sex and weird stuff? And like, do you guys like constantly try to have new people that fill that void? You know, let's talk about the void more. And they were like, well, I don't know that I have that same void you do. And so, you know, I still kind of was missing this thing. And then I was like, all right, well, these people just don't get me. I must not be that codependent. I must be something else. And I just floated on about through my life. I did everything that they talk about, you know, and switching from scotch to brandy. I did the geographical, you know, I moved across the United States to be with somebody. I have these like fishing lines out, you know, to people all over, and it's just lying in wait. And that's the predatorial thing that I talk about. It's not necessarily like a horrible, I'm not a consciously horrible person, I don't think. But I do have these little ties to people that, you know, before working any program, before examining myself at all, I didn't realize how self-centered it is to leave somebody lingering, you know, not that I have control over them, but to just check back in all these, you know, and I didn't really understand that part of myself. I just didn't, it's just blind spots. You know, I can't describe it any other way than I had all these blind spots that were left unchecked. My bottom came in June of 2021, when I had, like I said, my partners kept getting progressively more dangerous, more harder addicts, and just more violent. And it became sort of this like almost like a, okay, I need to find somebody that will treat me the way I feel about myself. So I need somebody that will be as rotten, as awful, and just beat me up, you know? And that is, it really just felt the most, I just felt like that I was, I don't know, it just scratched an itch. I can't really describe the feeling, but it felt right. And then it got to the point where it was so dangerous, and I wanted him to just, I wanted this last partner, I just wanted him to kill me. You know, I was like, you got something around here that'll do it? You know, and I thought that maybe he would be the sick type of person that might want to. And I don't know that that is a common thing. I've never really heard anybody say that in the SLAA meeting. But you know, if we're looking for comparison or similarities, but it was definitely my bottom, when I realized that I was the problem. After taking a look at all of these failed marriages or failed relationships, and I mean, hundreds of partners, you know, I had to have somebody constantly on the line, somebody in waiting, filling that void. And the answer did not, it was not them. And it finally occurred. I was like, okay, I really am the problem, and it's not getting any better. It's getting worse, and I don't want to be around anymore. So I stole this guy's gun, and I went off into the mountains of Washington State. And I was supposed to pick up my kids, from their fathers. And instead, I put my phone on airplane. I made everything unsearchable, and I disappeared. And I was gonna do it. I was gonna do it. And I was just trying not to hype myself up. But then there was this moment where I was like, oh, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll wait. Maybe I'm supposed to go get them. And I was, you know, but I was also really high on a cocktail of drugs. And trying to like numb or hype myself up, and I just couldn't quite get there. And then this text came through. I took it off airplane, you know, probably looking for something, some reason. And the text came through that my kids were scared, you know, and this is now I'm a day late. And that just, like, I mean, it just, I think it finally occurred to me how they might be affected by all of this. Because I didn't, I as far as I got with them, there's the self-centered thinking involved to be at that point, was, okay, well, they're going to be taken care of. I have a, you know, life insurance. I've got this. Their father's great. They've got a beautiful, sweet stepmother and siblings. They'll be cared for, and everybody will move on, and it'll be okay. Just really self-centered. And I, you know, I received that text, and like I said, it sort of opened my eyes just the tiniest bit, and I decided, okay, well, you know what? I'm just gonna head back, and I'll deal with the fallout, and then I'll find a better way. But I've got to wait until after this, you know, the first semester of their school year. They've been online. This, you know, and I start planning for this future, date to off myself, because it just logistically wasn't good timing. So I held off. And I went back, and I returned the gun to this guy, and then I went back to go get my kids. High as hell. Thank God. Thank goodness they didn't give them to me. But they sat me down and said, you can't have your kids back until something happens. I don't know what your problem is, but something's got to change. And so I went home. I never had any drugs on me, any alcohol in my home. I never kept any of that stuff. So I didn't get any more. And my whole family had this sort of like come to Jesus thing with me. They were gonna confront me, and they were gonna save me, and they were gonna help me see the monster that I've become. And I was all of those things. I definitely was a mess. But I still didn't want to be alive. You know, I was off drugs. I was trying to be somewhat accountable for the situation. I told them that, you know, at first I tried to lie. Oh, my car broke down. Okay, well, that doesn't work. I eventually got to the point where I told them that I was high and I wanted to kill myself. But so I started going to programs. They suggested just going through everything. So I went to NA, and I went to CA, and I went to SA, and a couple other ones. And I think that what ended up happening is I started going to SLAA meetings about like 2 weeks into that, and I finally heard someone describe that that need to fill the void with other people, and like it just that absolute self-loathing that I had always felt. So it struck, and I struck a chord, and I felt like I belong there. And I started working the steps. I found a godless heathen like myself to sponsor me, and she very kindly, very lovingly took me through the steps. I did everything she asked. I tried to have a God. I went through the motions. She had this like higher power, and she said it's got to go somewhere. So I tried that. I tried doorknobs. I tried the ocean. I tried lightning. I tried things. I tried this idea of this highest self. And that worked for a while. You know, this trying to be this best version of me. What would the best version of me do? And then, you know, that didn't work either. And today I find that what works best is staying away from anything like that and just not get in the weeds. I find that if I just you know, use synonyms or different words for certain things, I don't get hung up on terminology as much. And I'm able to see that, you know, I'm an addict, and my problem is trying to seek outside or temporary solutions for, you know, I sexualize guilt and anxiety and all these fears, and I look for others to sort of quell those things when they come up. And when I'm not doing those, I'm able to work and see for myself what areas need work. And I'm able to slowly, I'm finding that I'm slowly starting to see new things, new areas that need maintenance and cleaning, and not maintenance, but new areas that need to be cleaned up. And yeah, so that is mostly today. I am happy to say that kind of the next stage to becoming comfortable in my own skin, and not seeking outside attention or anything like that, is starting to sober date. And that was the next part of my recovery. It was really involved. It requires in my program like a dating plan, and mine was pretty hardcore. It was 90 days, no sex, and which is brand new to me. And I have pretty what's called bottom lines and top lines in this program. Again, it kind of requires a glossary, but I have very, very clear boundaries or bottom lines. And as long as I'm staying away from those or actions that sort of cause that, then I'm doing okay. And when I do, it's sort of this, oh, hey, I know I have these new tools that I can pick up and be like, okay, well, if I am seeking validation from this person, I'm not giving myself something. And I can try to decide, okay, well, I go through my checklist of, am I taking care of my health and hygiene? Am I clean? And is my environment tidy? Am I organized? Am I being an active listener? Am I doing things for myself and others? And I just can go through this and diagnose sort of like self-diagnosis, diagnostics of where I'm at and what am I asking somebody else to give me? What else? I guess So I went through the sober dating. I'm in a sober relationship. I don't seek outside male attention. And I have male friends, which is amazing. And it wasn't always men. It definitely wasn't. But I would say my biggest issue, the hangers-on, the fishing lines that I had out were mostly men. And I can have male friends, and it's not, I don't sexualize these relationships. I'm not objectifying people anymore. I can just be friends with people and let them be whole humans and not place these, this perceived sexual relationship on these things. I used to joke, but I had to stay away from, in the beginning, I had to stay away from grocery stores, because that was like my hunting ground. I would be in line, and I would create a relationship with the person in front of me. You're like, oh man, I wonder what he's like. I wonder what our future would be like. Oh, what car would we get? Insane, absolutely insane thoughts. But falling in love with your mailman is just what sex and love addicts do. And I understand that now. Gosh, I don't know that I have anything else to say, and I think it's all pretty redundant. So I think I'm good. I think that's enough. But thanks for listening.